Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 15th day of November, the Ides of November, Anno Domini 2025. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, not to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues?
Yeah, wait. Let me get my knife.
Yeah. Take a stab at it. Yeah. Here comes the news. Before we talk about the news, I should mention that on this date in 1971, that's right, 54 years ago, Intel introduced the first commercially available microprocessor, the 4004. I loved that little chip. It ran... Exactly. It ran at a whopping 740 kilohertz and had a whole 2,300 transistors at a 10 micrometer process.
Yep.
On the chip, as opposed to like the 5 nanometers they're doing now. So, yeah, it was you could hook up 4K of memory, 640 bytes, a 4K of program memory,
yeah,
640 bytes of RAM. 640 bytes.
And that's all you were ever going to need.
And that's all you never need. I ran one of those on a Cosmac RCA VIP. Cosmac VIP from RCA. My father-in-law had it, and I used to play with that all the time. Very cool little chip. But anyway, today is the birthday of the 4004 Intel chip. All right. But that's not the news of the day. At the same time that Google was issuing an emergency update for all Chrome browser users in response to a high-severity security vulnerability, Microsoft issued a security warning of its own. A newly discovered zero-day vulnerability in the Windows kernel can enable an attacker to gain system privileges. Yes, a Windows kernel zero-day. Yes, attackers have already struck. Yes, you need to update now. The latest chapter in the never-ending cybersecurity drama that is patched Tuesday has been released, and this time it contains no less than 63 vulnerabilities. There's one, though, that stands out, CVE-2025-62215, an actively exploited zero-day within the Windows kernel itself. It's likely to affect just about every asset running Microsoft software. The prize could be remote code execution as system via the network without any need for any existing foothold. This is bad. This is very, very bad. As I said, this vulnerability is already being exploited. And remember, it's being run by bots. They're constantly searching the internet for any computer. There's none of this, oh, I have nothing they want. I'm not important. It's a bot. And it's hitting every single computer it can find. And besides,
including your routers and your security cameras and
printers. Right. Besides, have you ever done your banking through your computer? Have you ever bought anything and put in a credit card number? Update now. If you're running any version of Windows 10 or 11 or Server, you need to make sure you're up to date.
10
and,
even?
And not, what?
Did they release a patch for 10?
Oh, they did. Well, it's a security update. So if you're part of the ESU, you get it. If you're not, too bad. You're owned. Who cares? Microsoft doesn't.
Yeah.
No.
And don't just trust that you're updated. Verify. Go in and check to see what version you're running. Microsoft is taking this one very, very seriously, and you should too. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is critical Microsoft alert. Update Windows 10, 11, and Server right now. Your choices are, I am definitely up to date. I think I'm up to date. I have no idea. I'll check right now. And this is one reason I don't use Windows. So far, we've got 27 votes, and 16 of them are, this is just one reason I don't use Windows.
Yep.
Of course, you can vote in the poll. It's awful easy. All you have to do is head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, and vote in the poll. And of course, if you would like to give us a call and talk about this or dang near any other computer topic, you can do that too. Just give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415.
Even Apple released a bunch of zero-day patches earlier in the month.
Yep.
I got a kick out of it because usually an Apple update is 5, 10 patches compared to Microsoft's 100.
Yes.
This last patch was 50 updates from Apple.
Including several zero days. Microsoft.
Yeah.
Remember, a zero-day vulnerability means that that vulnerability is already being exploited. So you need to update immediately. Don't put it off. Don't wait for tomorrow or the next day. It's a pain in the neck to do Microsoft Windows updates. I fully understand that. I still do have one Windows machine, and it took 40 minutes. It just kept stalling. It stalled at, I remember, 81%. It was stalled there for what seemed like 2 or 3 days. And it stalled at 95%. And then the other one was somewhere in the 30s, I think. But it eventually finished. I don't know what took it so long. It's an i5 processor. You would have thought it would be...
Yeah, and used it in a long enough time.
Well, that's certainly part of it. But, you know, I get it. It takes a while. But this one is important. Because they can do all kinds of things with your machine. Once they own, because this one gets into the kernel itself, which means they have system level privileges, which means they can do anything they want. If they want to store pornography on your computer in order to serve it to somebody else, they can do that. And you might not even know about it. Mm-hmm. They can use you to break into a bank, and you wouldn't even know about it until somebody knocked on your door. Or kicked your door in. So, you know, this one you got to take seriously. It's easy to do the update, of course, as with any Windows update. You can just search for update, and it'll bring up the Windows update thing. Click on that and let it do the update. It takes a while, like I said, but you should do that immediately, if not sooner.
Yeah.
All right.
I was going to say, you could do, you know, if you're going out for the afternoon after the show, you know, start it then. By the time you come back, it'll probably be done and updated.
Yep. All right. Let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Jack from Gates, New York. What's up, Jack?
I had an issue installing Linux on an Acer computer.
Okay.
And I remember on a previous show you mentioned be careful about, you know, copy off all the error messages and make sure you have those. So I went to one of these Linux forums, and I had the error messages, and it took almost a couple weeks and a half a dozen people offering suggestions before I could solve the problem. And the issue we were running into was that people were requesting that I make all these different changes to the BIOS. And they were frustrated because I either didn't have that command line existing in my BIOS or the command line was there but I couldn't act upon it. So I solved the problem, finally got solved. But my question is, why is BIOS different on all the different computers? Why isn't it standardized? I didn't understand that.
Because there's 100 companies that want to make their own thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, maybe not 100 anymore. There's 3 or 4 major BIOS companies that pretty
much they
got to
have their own little twist on it.
Well, and there's two reasons. That's one of them. Multiple different companies make the product, and so, for example, Acer buys from MSI, maybe. Dell buys from somebody else, AMD or AMS? What is it? I don't remember. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, there are multiple companies making them, and people buy whichever is cheapest or best fits their hardware. And that's part two. Not all computers are identical, so the basic input-output system has to be tuned to that set of hardware. So, for example, you don't need... a setting in your BIOS to handle your TPM 2.0 chip if you don't have a TPM 2.0 chip. So you would not use that company's BIOS or that version of that company's BIOS.
It's interesting you say that because the final solution to the problem was disabling the TPM. That finally allowed me to launch Linux on the Acer.
Yeah,
and some of that's because the TPM assumes you're running Windows, and if you're not running Windows, so, oh, there's an error. I better stop this.
Yep. But it depends on which version of TPM you have. It depends on which set of driver chips you've got for your USB or your screen or your modem or, you know, whatever. And so there are many versions of the BIOS and that's why there are so many because there's so many versions of the hardware.
Okay, thanks for answering that question. That cleared that up.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Jack. Yeah, the BIOS, the basic input output system is the thing that at the lowest level interfaces between the software, whether it's Windows or Linux, and the hardware that it runs on. It's the BIOS that handles that low level stuff. It's the thing that says, so when your computer starts up, the operating system, whichever one it is, basically goes to the BIOS and says, what have I got?
Mm-hmm.
And the BIOS says, okay, here are your USB ports. Here's what your screen looks like. This is the keyboard.
Video memory.
Everything. Exactly right. This is how much memory you've got. This is the hard drives you have. This is everything.
Remember when you had to type all that in yourself?
And you used to have to type all that in yourself and then remember to save the file and hope it didn't get corrupted.
Yeah.
But that all is handled now by the BIOS. But again, because so many different versions of hardware exist, so many different versions of BIOS exist.
And BIOS is being replaced by EFI and now UEFI.
UEFI.
That has more capabilities. But it's
it
almost
still does essentially the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing. But it's almost a whole separate computer in there doing it.
Yes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, it's got to keep up with the technology, mm-hmm. you know, demanding of bigger, better, faster machines.
Right. And now it used to also be, remember, that you often could not boot your computer because the clock battery died.
Mm-hmm.
Now the system says, okay, this is what I think the time is.
Yeah.
But now we'll wait until the operating system is loaded. Then we'll ask the operating system to go to the internet and get the real time.
Yep.
Sometimes even before you boot.
We
see that on the Mac. When you first turn on a brand new Mac, it asks you what language you want to use because they're international computers. It starts with Afghanistan because that's alphabetically first. But if you wait like 5 seconds, it suddenly pops up U.S. You didn't have to log in anything, but it looked on your internet. It looked at your router and because your router has a location built into it. I'll suggest this language in this country because that's where I am at the moment.
It also can go out to the DNS.
Yep.
And say, you know, what country are you in?
Yep.
To the DNS server. So, yeah, it can do that sort of stuff now completely automatically. But, again, how that happens and whether that happens is different in every BIOS because it's different on every computer. And that's why. But, and the BIOS or the EFI or the UEFI is the thing that is at the lowest level of boot. And again, at the very lowest level, when you set up a computer, when you format a hard drive and install an operating system on it, it has what used to be called a boot sector. And the boot sector is on the hard drive. Well, how do I get to the hard drive? The BIOS will tell you that.
And that's where boot comes from, picking yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Remember that idiom anymore?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, really.
Because who wears boots anymore?
And do boots even have straps anymore?
Right.
Because that's where you strapped on the spurs.
Right. That's how you pulled them on.
Yeah. Pull them on, yeah, the loops.
Right, so you could lift yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Yep.
Hold yourself up. So, the system has to boot, and so it says to the BIOS, where's the hard drive? It says, oh, it's here. Okay, how do I talk to it? Oh, like this. Okay, so where's the boot sector? Oh, it's here. Okay, now I can boot. But that all happens in the BIOS. And again, what type of hard drive do you have? Where is that hard drive? A lot of machines these days, some machines these days, boot off the network. So it has to say, where's the network? Where's your boot drive? I don't have one. It's a network. Okay, how do I get to the network? Oh, like this. Okay, where am I going? Oh, you're going here. Okay, give me my stuff. Okay, here it is. Now you can boot.
Yep.
So, the BIOS does there's a lot that goes on before you actually run your computer. And you can see that some of that, at least a hint of that, if you hit for the startup menu, the boot menu, like on many computers it's F12 nowadays. You turn it on, you start tapping F12 until you see the boot menu, and you get your main hard drive, a USB drive you may have installed, and many of them will say the NIC.
You turn off the company logo that hides all that information.
Right. And many of them will have the NIC, the Network Information Controller, or Interface Controller. And that will let you boot from the network. Now, you have to have a machine on the network that has bootable images on it, which you don't have likely. But, that's an option, for example, in a lot of businesses.
Yeah.
Particularly the more secure businesses, right? So that we don't want you peons running whatever you want. So we're going to make you boot from the network so that we can do whatever we want to your operating system before you load it. Microsoft is talking about that.
Yep.
That's what Microsoft is talking about when they talk about running Windows in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Apple has an internet boot system as a last recovery effort if your hard drive dies. And it always strikes me as so amazing. I can boot my computer over the internet.
Let's try that again.
And on the Mac, if you hold down Command V for verbose, you see all of the startup messages go flying by. And it looks like DOS because it's Unix.
right. Yeah. Everybody hides that now, but it's still happening in the background.
Yeah.
And you can make it happen on Linux and on a Mac. It for people who know what they're looking at and can see it go by that fast nowadays. It used to be was slower.
We have to take a video of it so you can see the last error message before it loads the login window.
Right.
Please hold.
All right, let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Yes. Could you go on a little bit more about the Windows 10 extended support?
Yes.
The website, and it says you get it for free if you just think you're a PC.
Yeah. Well, okay. So here's the deal. There's I think three ways to get it.
Yeah. I'll pop it to the top.
Yeah. There will be a link on our website about it. But the three ways are you can pay them in order to get it. I think it's $30. Or you can save your system setup to your OneDrive account. And that's basically like what hard drive you're running, what software you've got loaded, that sort of thing.
Right. So if you're running OneDrive already, you still need to go in through the backup settings and pick what you want to back up.
Well, it's not part of the backup settings. It's the sync settings.
Right.
Syncing your settings. And the link will show you how to do that in a minute. The other way is to use a Bing points. So if you go to rewards.microsoft.com, if you use Microsoft Edge browser, you've been accumulating Bing points with every search you've done. I had like 2,000 Bing points, and I'm on a Mac.
Right.
And so I got that for free.
But yeah, so those are the three ways that you can get the extended support, and two of them are free, basically. So, why not? And the reality is that Microsoft honestly already knows what's in your machine. So syncing your settings to OneDrive is a no-brainer. It really doesn't matter in terms of your security.
If you have a shared Microsoft 365 family plan, does that help on that as well?
No, it has nothing to do with that. Your 365,
totally separate.
Yeah, your 365 account. May also use OneDrive, but it doesn't enter into this particular discussion.
Yeah, OneDrive is a free service, so it doesn't matter that it also comes in 365.
Well, except that you only get 5 gigs.
You'll get 5 gigs free. Yeah, so you have enough free space for your settings.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's all you have to basically back up. You really don't need to back up the whole PC and all your...
just sync your settings. And the link that Steve has popped to the top will tell you how to sync just your settings, which is all you need to do to get the ESU. You do that, wait a little while, and I would suggest, you know, be patient, a whole day maybe, although most people get it real quick.
Yeah.
But then you can go in and take a look at your about windows, and it will tell you you're on ESU.
You do have to be updated to Windows 10 22H2 first.
Right, right.
So if you're not there already, run all the Windows updates until you're at 22H2. And then in the Windows update setting, it will have an option to enroll in the ESU and give you the three options you have.
But
I've seen a couple of people.
My settings first will automatically say, oh, you're. Back up your settings.
Yep, it will know. I've had customers that didn't know they were backing up their settings to OneDrive already. No OneDrive. I'm going to store the file on my computer that I own in my house.
Yeah, right. But yeah, you can do that in whichever order you want. But once you've done it, go back and check to make sure you're actually enrolled.
Got
and
it.
Then you should get an update. You should get this latest update, and you should install that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an afternoon for you. Get all the updates loaded.
Yeah.
And then enroll in the ESU and then load the new updates.
That's a weekend, actually.
Yeah.
Yes, you should do that.
Right. Okay, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
Yep.
And you only get that till next October 15th, I think, or 13th?
Supposedly.
Yeah, for another year.
Yeah.
They may extend it again.
You never know. They could extend it again. They could just end it. They don't care.
Yep. Mozilla just extended support for Windows 7 on Firefox ESU, extended security updates. So if you're still running Windows 7, your Firefox will still have modern security protocols.
Yeah, and that's about the only thing that will. So, ESU, for those of you who have still not pulled the trigger, pull it. It's a free thing, and you get a whole nother year. Well, now what? 11 months.
Yeah.
Of Windows 10, which I know you're incredibly reluctant to give up Windows 10. I get that, but you might as well get security while you still can.
Yep.
And particularly now with the latest announcement from Microsoft.
I had a customer this week that didn't know he was on Windows 11. He thought he was still on 10. So now your taskbar's in the center. You're on 11. I didn't know I was on 11. It never asked me to put 11 in.
Okay.
You probably didn't notice that window saying we're doing 11.
Yeah. People don't pay attention. They get click happy. They just go next because they want to be done and move on to the next thing. And then they're surprised when something is different.
And that's the biggest thing. He didn't notice that the taskbar is now in the center of your screen instead of on the left. You can move it back to the left if you want to, but by default it's in the center.
Right. And that seems to be the big bugaboo for most people. Where the we have one here. We don't have that one. Okay. Yeah. Well, all right. That seems to be the big bugaboo for most people. Windows 11 kind of honestly isn't that much different from 10. Not really. They've moved a few things around. You get more ads, certainly. But generally speaking, it's very similar, except now the taskbar is in the middle, and you can move it back to the left, and that's easy enough to do. So, we've come quite a long way from our 4004 days. And I remember the 8080 chip, the 8008 first, then the 8080, then the Zilog Z80.
Oh.
Running at a full 2 megahertz, baby.
Blazing.
Holy mother of pearl, that was a machine.
Set back, get the extinguisher ready.
Exactly right. Those were the days. All right, we're going to descend into nostalgia land for a couple minutes. So why don't we take a little break right here. We're gonna take a break. You can listen to our underwriters as they talk about all the amazing things that they do. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Everybody get up.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Van Wright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we have Bruce from Fairport, New York on the line. What's up, Bruce? Bruce? Are you there, buddy? Nope, apparently not. Okay, we do not have Bruce. False alarm. Stand down. Stand down. We do not have Bruce from Fairport, New York.
Try again, Bruce.
Try again, Bruce. Right. Don't know what happened there.
Our school phones are not meant for call-in radio shows.
Sound bite your name.
And so we're frantically going back to the phone.
Yeah, going back to the phone. We do have callers waiting. We have, as Steve alluded to, this station was never really designed for call-in shows, and so where some days it's not as exciting as it could be.
We do the best we can.
Or maybe it's more exciting than it should be. All right, so we're going to try this time for Chuck from Penfield, New York. What's up, Chuck?
Hi, gentlemen.
Who came in?
I need a little help setting up a older router as a Wi-Fi extender repeater. I've been all through the YouTube videos and online, and I get 15 different conflicting information, and depending on whose router you're using, the settings are different, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Can you give me a generalized view of what's supposed to happen and how I'm supposed to go about this?
All right, let's start with what a router does.
Okay.
What a router does is connect the internet to your internal network.
Right.
So what the way it
Bruce,
does that
on. We'll have you on
is it takes
okay?
It takes the signal from the internet and then spreads it out to all your machines on all their own addresses.
Either wirelessly or wired.
Either wirelessly or wired. And each machine gets a different address.
Right, okay.
But it's on your own network, generally 192.168.something.something.
Okay.
That's called a non-routable address space. And what that means is it can't go back out to the internet by itself. So the router is really a gateway between you and the internet. So if you're going to use a different router as an extender, you have to turn off almost all of those functions.
On the second router. Right, okay,
because,
that's where I'm getting a little fuzzy.
Right, so what you want to do is tell the second router, you're not creating a network, you're not going to generate...
I'm not on the internet.
Right, you're not on the internet, you're internal.
And I disabled DHCP, so it can't assign any addresses to anybody.
Right, so all you're going to do... What?
Disable NAT. So
disable NAT.
Yeah.
And disable NAT.
NAT. Yeah. NAT.
NAT. Okay. That's
network address translation. You have to turn that off, as well as DHCP.
That's often part of DHCP, but some routers have two separate boxes.
Right. And all you want it to do is pass information through from the main router to the other computers that are too far away to get information from the main router.
In the wireless setup, the default is usually create a network.
Right.
Right.
You want
to
change that to join an existing network.
Right.
It is possible.
That I haven't seen as a selection. I've seen there's a button that says create a repeater mode.
There you go.
That could
be probably
it.
Do the same thing. Okay.
Yes. So, yeah, some routers cannot be set in this mode.
Okay.
The router only. And the other major issue is that routers don't talk to each other very well.
Okay.
It's best to use the same brand of main router that you are using as an extender router.
Okay, and that I don't have.
And it's even better to not use an extender at all. Replace all of your routers with a mesh network.
Right.
Which is designed to operate automatically in a mesh of routers.
And less headaches.
And easier to set up.
More equipment, and I'm trying to get by with what I have.
Right, no, so yes, to get by with what you have.
Yeah.
Again, you know, from best case to worst case. Best case is a mesh network.
Yep.
Next best case is all the same equipment. Right, and then there's what you've got.
Yeah.
Right. Hodgepodge.
Okay. Okay. So I'm through on the list. All right.
Yeah. So what you need to do is to if you have a choice of making an extender or what was the phrase you used?
A repeater or
repeater.
Yeah. Okay.
Try that and theoretically that will do all the rest of it. Turn off all the other stuff.
Okay. Now when I set the follow-on repeater router, I need to enter a reserved IP address from the main router.
Right.
Okay. And I need to enter an SSID, which is the same as the main router he uses?
Right. So yes. What you want to do is, say, let's say your main router is called Chuck's ABC, router.
Whatever. Okay.
So in the second router, you would say the place you want to go is Chuck's router.
So, okay. So if you're moving your laptop from one router to the other, it can switch automatically.
Okay. Actually, what I want to do is hook this up to a printer that does not have wireless.
Okay, I see.
And use it kind of as a print server.
So that's often called a wireless bridge.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. They're,
in fact, bridge might be one of the words you'll find in the setup.
Okay, but they're kind of the same thing, or is there a difference?
Well, for what you want to do, I would try bridge first.
Okay, if it's there.
If it's there. Otherwise, repeater.
Okay.
That's the way I would go with that myself.
Yeah. Okay.
Again, you're doing this with one hand tied behind your back.
Yep.
But and certainly you can give that a try.
Okay. And you want to make sure you run all the latest firmware updates on your router.
Okay.
Both routers.
All the routers. Yep. And the problem is a lot of older routers don't get firmware updates anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. So they are vulnerable to attacks from the internet.
All right. Okay. But if this one is as a repeater, would it be accessible that way or not?
Theoretically, if you've given it an internal non-routable address, that 192.168.something.something, then theoretically, it's less likely.
Okay, so if the first one is .1.1 and I made this .1.2...
As a reservation, yeah.
Yeah, and it has to be reserved on the main router also.
Right. No, it should be reserved on the main router, absolutely.
Yeah. Is it manually set? Okay.
The problem becomes if your main router doesn't have the latest updates and it gets infected, that can then spread the network through all of the devices in your network, even the ones that aren't directly connected to the internet.
But that's an issue with the main router, and that should be addressed first anyway. So.
Right.
But once you've addressed that, then either repeater mode or extender mode or, you know, whatever you have there.
But I do need to use an SSID that's the same as the main router SSID. I don't have a new SSID on this repeater router.
Right.
Okay.
So otherwise, you'd have to manually switch networks as you move around. Which is interesting. I see a lot of extender boxes automatically create a Wi-Fi extend network. So then you have to manually switch to the new network wherever you go.
I don't want to do that.
Yep.
The MAC address that you would enter on the secondary router is going to be the MAC address of the main router.
Right.
So it knows where it's getting its stuff from.
Yep.
And the same, the channel that you have to reserve channels.
And this should be the same.
Same channel. You don't use an automatic channel assignment.
Right.
You reserve a channel.
Okay. And you want to use a channel that your neighbors aren't using.
Right, yeah. I got a thing that looks at who's got the strongest whatever. And then the password is, again, the same password as the main router password.
It doesn't have to be.
Oh, okay. But the main router has to know what that password is to get access to the second one.
No.
Oh, no?
No.
During the setup, yes.
During setup, it has to know. It will ask. It should ask you. But
okay.
But the person who needs that information is you, not the router.
Will it hurt to make them the same?
No.
Okay. All right.
Not at all.
I'm going to make this as easy as it's kind of convolutingly would be possible.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay. All right. Let me go with that some more maybe next week I'll call you again.
All right. Well, good luck, Chuck.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. Yep. Bye-bye. Yeah. Setting up, if you're looking at buying new equipment, think about a mesh router.
Which pretty much all of them are now, anyway.
Which most of them are now.
$100 a unit is typical for home mesh routers.
Right. And so, you know, I have one, and I thought, okay, this is going to be, because setting up a network is a pain in the butt, frankly.
Okay, hold on.
And
Mark.
I set up this mesh network, and all I did was turn it on. Suddenly, it was working.
Yep.
I thought, okay, even I can do this. So, yeah, it was.
The one thing I hate as a tech guy is all the mesh routers set up with an app on your phone.
Oh, I hate that.
And you can't get any of the detail stuff that I want to see.
That I want to see, exactly.
But
right.
As a home user, that's a perfect way to do it.
Yep, exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hello, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
Same, peachy. Going back to that one gentleman that was talking about installing Linux, I got around a lot of that by using a USB DVD drive instead of making a bootable USB stick.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, some older BIOSes, back to BIOS again, some older BIOSes will boot a CD, but they won't boot USB.
Right.
So
mine would do both, but I was having a major problem with the bootable USB. I think part of the problem is making them, and it's got to be a lot, because Linux wants a live bootable drive.
Right.
That it kind of complicates things a little bit and how it talks to the BIOS and all that stuff. So I got around it by doing the DVD part, and I didn't care how long it took, as long as it got done properly, and it did, and it worked great.
Right, and that's why a lot of people don't like the DVD, because it is slower. But so like you said, so what?
You don't do it once.
Yeah. You do it once, you're done.
It's not like Windows, where you have to reinstall every couple of months.
good tip, Mark.
Going to your, it worked for me, at least. It took all that complicated stuff out of it. So
yep, that makes a lot of sense.
The second, it did for me, too. The second thing was the Windows updates. I noticed on my computer, my HP that I got last year, last spring, was still only on 23H2. And it would not update to 24, because I know 23 was ending like this past week. And it wouldn't update. And I waited to the day that it was the last day, and it wouldn't update, so I had to go and find the update wizard from Microsoft.
Right.
In order to update it, and then it brought it up to 25.
Yeah. Look, one of the things that we have discovered about Microsoft is that they are politely slapdash, slipshod about properly maintaining their update systems. And I'm glad you found a way around it, but yes, sometimes that's what you have to do.
It's mostly because they've decimated their QA and testing programs.
Right.
And leaving it up to AI now instead of people.
Yeah, and trying to get help from them is like, you know.
Right.
I would wait and get better help here than I could from them anyway.
Thank you.
So, well, you're welcome. I mean, you've always helped me. But yeah, I had to do it that way, and then it said it would give me 24, but it gave me 25, which was fine. It runs great. There's no problems.
Good.
So,
excellent.
But I just thought I'd throw that out there. If people are still running 23H2, you better get off it. It's not supported.
Yep. That's right. It's one of our other news items today. Yeah.
Don't trust them to give you the update.
Exactly right.
Yeah, a lot of times you have to keep checking and keep checking. Sometimes that's because there's dependencies, so you can't get this update until you get this first one first.
Right. Yeah, the thing to do, and everybody should hear this, the thing to do is when you do an update, do another one immediately and keep doing them until it says there are no updates.
Well, plus some people are just lazy and don't want to take the time to do the updates, because they sit there, well, no, I'm in the middle of something right now. That's going to tie up my machine for a while, and I don't have the time for that right now. And they, you know, procrastinate.
I had that discussion with my wife the other day. She said, I don't want to do an update now. I want to take a nap. I said, this is the perfect time to do an update. Start it, go take a nap, and then come back.
I had a customer say, what's that orange light that been in my taskbar for 3 months?
Oh, yeah.
That says update's ready. Do you want to restart now?
Yeah.
You're done for the day? Hit restart now.
Yeah. Why not?
Go on your Windows machine, go to your search bar, and type in WinVer.
Yep.
WINVER, it'll tell you which version you're on.
Yep.
And if you're anything below 24H2, try to find an update.
Yep, do your updates. Good thought, Mark. Thank you.
Okay, guys, have a good weekend.
You too. Keep smiling.
Thank you.
Yeah, Microsoft is, I don't know how to put this politely, so I'll just move on.
If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Exactly. So let's go to the news, which mostly won't be nice. Microsoft has released a new KB update, the first Windows 10 extended security update since the operating system reached end of support last month. On October 14th, Microsoft released the final Windows 10 cumulative update, after which the operating system no longer receives bug fixes or free security updates. As Microsoft is no longer releasing new features or maintenance fixes for Windows 10, the new KB update only resolves a bug erroneously stating that Windows 10 LTSC devices have reached end of support, even though they receive support until January of 2027. It does, however, include this month's security updates, which fix 63 flaws and one actively exploited elevation of privilege vulnerability, which we talked about in the last half hour. Microsoft is undergoing major shifts as it looks to redesign its suite of products. That's right. Just as you get used to the new redesign, there's going to be another new redesign. Shut up, citizen. Move along. The evolution has brought sweeping changes that have made Microsoft users wary of the new direction, ranging from the unfortunate demise of Skype to AI-induced price hikes for Microsoft 365. One change that dismayed longtime users was Microsoft announced discontinuation of one of its oldest applications, Microsoft Publisher. According to Microsoft's lifecycle page, the company will officially cease supporting that application on October 1 of 2026. In the intervening year, users are encouraged to convert all publisher files to a different format, like a PDF or a Word document. Because if you're still using Microsoft Publisher, it goes away in less than a year. Alongside this month's Patch Tuesday release, Microsoft reminded customers that this is what Mark was talking about. Systems running Home Pro and Pro editions of Windows 11 23H2 have stopped receiving security updates. The announcement follows three previous alerts when Microsoft asked users to upgrade their devices to the latest available Windows 11 release, first in August, then in September, and the last one in October. So if you haven't upgraded to Windows 11 24H2, you're less protected than Windows 10 users who enrolled in the ESU program. Isn't that special? Microsoft has resolved a known issue preventing users from quitting the Windows 11 Task Manager after installing the optional Windows 11 update. The bug was acknowledged last week after widespread users reported that Task Manager continued to run in the background even after the app was quit, causing performance issues such as stuttering and CPU hangs. Although having a few Task Manager processes running in the background usually doesn't cause issues, this issue can easily become serious when many instances run unnoticed, since it can cause notable slowdowns and delays in other applications, according to Microsoft. Microsoft is rolling out a new Teams feature for premium customers that will automatically block screenshots and recordings during meetings. Cleverly named Prevent Screen Capture, it restricts access to visual meeting content by preventing screen capture on Windows and Android devices using native device tools and most third-party apps. One of the problems that people have had for the longest time is that even if you're not recording it, I could run a screen recorder on my end and record a meeting.
And disseminate confidential information.
All right, so fair warning, we record this show every week, but you should still give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
Did you hear the story about the Microsoft said that the Teams team has to return to working in the office because Teams isn't conducive to remote work?
Yes! Yes, Microsoft has stopped eating their own dog food. That's ridiculous. I'm working with a small company that does video conferencing stuff, and we don't even have an office. We do everything online.
Remotely.
Why not? It works perfectly, and it saves time and effort and money, and particularly during the winter when nobody wants to leave the house. We can have meetings as often as we want. Well, that can be a problem, but,
yeah.
But generally speaking...
this meeting could have been an email.
This email could have been a text.
Yeah.
This text could have been a raised eyebrow. Move on. But yeah, so.
Well, it's only for people who are within 50 miles of a Microsoft office. So if you live farther away from that, you can still be remote on Teams.
What if you're 50 miles from a Microsoft office that isn't where the rest of your Teams is?
Yeah.
Then you, I guess you go to the office and use Teams from there. That's stupid, too. Yeah. That's just dumb.
I've heard stories about that. Tech support trying to help help a customer, not a customer, an employee who can't get connected to the VPN. Turns out they're in the office today, and that's why the VPN won't work. You don't need the VPN when you're in the office. The point of the VPN is to connect you to the office when you're not in the office.
And he's a paid employee?
Yeah. If I were working in an office where we use Teams, I would ask the serious question of my Microsoft representative, if you people don't trust Teams, why should I?
Yeah, good one.
It's not as effective as in-person collaboration.
We know that.
So that's why they're making people come back to work.
Okay. Sure. This is the other thing I don't understand. It costs a lot of money to keep an office running.
Yeah.
It costs a lot of money. Why would I do that?
That rent, the overhead, the insurances.
We already have this
giant electricity.
We already have this giant building. Why are we wasting all the office space?
there are two answers to that question.
Apple's campus was $5 billion for that spaceship.
The liability insurance, too. I mean, because, you know, you just don't rent a place and then, oh, yeah, I'm good. No, you've got to carry liability insurance in case somebody comes into your place, falls, trips.
And then you're paying somebody to mow the lawn. You're paying somebody to shovel
snow.
I mean, you're doing all of that. And when all you could do is say, you know what? I will pay your $40, $50 a month internet connection.
Yeah.
We pay, what, $20 a square foot for office space. I'd rather pay for two square feet of office space a month. Three, four, I don't care.
Some places have gotten, that I know, a couple of them, have gotten into where they rent space just to hold a meeting.
Right.
Come in, do their monthly meeting, and then, boom, they go back home.
Right.
The co-work space is very common, yeah.
Right.
But typically, a company pays double your salary as the cost of you being there.
Right.
So your salary, but then your office space, your cubicle, your furniture, your computer, your telephone, tech support.
I'd rather they give me a raise and let me work from home.
Yeah.
You have 50% raise and work from home. Right. And the company will still save money.
They won't even have to pay me to wear pants.
And it's a well-known fact. People perform, if not do more.
Yeah.
Well, see, that it would limit all the middle managers who don't have a way to make sure you're working.
Well, that's the real problem. Yeah. They don't understand how to manage remote users.
Yep.
And rather than learn how to use them, they insist everybody come back into the office. I hate old people. All right.
You is one.
I is one. All right. That music tells us the first hour of this show is history, but do not go away. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, and a whole nother hour of Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or anywhere else from 1-800-790-0415. We're going to take a little bio break, but we'll be back in just a few minutes. So you can take one too, get yourself a beverage, get yourself a snack, but come on back for the second hour of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And we have Ed from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Ed?
Calling about extended support on
sure.
Windows 10. A few months ago, a friend of mine said, hey, my Windows 10 says I need to go to Windows 11. Can you help me? So I went over to his machine. We did the check, and the machine is not capable of upgrading to Windows 11.
Sure.
So we went through the extended support process, sign up, and I said to him, you have three ways to enroll. How would you like to enroll? And he said, oh, I'll pay the $30. I said, okay. We did the attempt, and it failed. His system was not ready to enroll. So I said, we'll do this another day. So last week was the other day.
Sure.
I showed up, said, well, let's try this again. Looked at it. He had all updates. So I said, let's try this. So we tried it, hit the enroll button, and it came up and said, congratulations, you have been enrolled because you have been backing up your system settings.
Okay.
So I said to him, you're backing up your system settings. And he said, oh, am I?
A previous update installed Outlook, which in turn decided to sync everything in your home folder, your desktop documents and settings, to the Microsoft Cloud.
So I said, you have your documents on OneDrive. And he said, yeah, that's really driving me crazy because I'm wondering whether when I select a file, I'm actually editing the one on my computer or whether I'm editing the one on OneDrive. So I said, well, how would you want that to work? And he said, well, basically, I don't want to deal with OneDrive. I want my files only on my PC, basically, you know, in yep. my house, on my computer, blah, blah, blah. So I said, okay, well, I said, you know, we can organize your files and put them on your PC in a new folder that's not called documents, and we'll give it a different name. And he said, that would be great. And I said, you know, you could, like, break the link to OneDrive. And he said, I'd be happy to do that because I don't need OneDrive.
It's very hard because every Microsoft update puts it back in.
So then the little light bulb went on, and I thought, if he is syncing his settings, if we break the use of his OneDrive to hold his documents, will Microsoft say, hey, you're no longer backing up your system settings, and that's how you got the ESU for free?
Probably, yes.
Well, yeah, it depends on how tight they define it. You did sync your settings.
Well,
you are syncing your settings.
Yeah, I don't know that, but I suspect that they want those settings, and so they are checking.
Well, you can sync your settings separately from syncing all your files.
Well, that's what I'm wondering about.
Yeah.
And is it clear how to do that? And
no.
To tell the difference?
No, heck no.
It's clear as mud.
Yeah.
It's in the settings app.
The other alternative is to move his documents to that newly named folder on his machine, and then Windows continuing to try to mirror his files would probably never notice that the files in his documents folder are never changing because he's actually using another folder now.
Right. That's certainly one way to do it. You can also go into the Settings app and choose the folders that you want to be backed up to OneDrive. So if you choose, uncheck all the folders, then it doesn't back those things up. But we'll still be connected and still backing up your settings.
Because settings is a separate checkbox.
Without backing up the folders.
Yes.
Slider
yes.
button.
Yeah. Okay. So basically we starve Microsoft OneDrive from what it has to update.
Right. Now, that said, I certainly hope your friend has some sort of regular backup.
He does.
Okay.
Yeah. During the experience on his computer, I determined he has been running backups, but his external drive is full, and we're going to deal with that because he just thought he was getting current backups. And then the other thing was, he said, what happens at the end of the year? And I said, have you ever considered leaving Windows and going to Linux? And he said, sure, I'd like to try that. So
that's
a future project that, you know, we probably will set up his Microsoft machine to be dual boot with something like Mint.
Yep.
And get him used to using Linux, and then at the end of the year saying, do you want, you know, want to make the leap the whole way?
Good idea. Very good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, like I said, it's was these cases of this, you know, he's backing up the system settings without knowing it, and I thought if I break that, you know, Microsoft could come back and say, where's your $30?
Right, but you can just turn off the folders you don't want backed up.
Well, and he might want to check his credit card statement, because if you guys tried to pay the $30 and it failed to register ESU, maybe the payment went through and something else failed. So
We never got to that point because he never had to pull out his credit card.
Good.
Yeah. All right. It's the good. Then you're backed up. Just turn off the folders he doesn't want backed up to OneDrive and move on.
Yeah. Great. Okay.
All right. Glad thanks.
Right. Bye.
Yeah.
So I've run across a couple customers like that. We go in to do the ESU, and it says, all right, go ahead. No problem. You're already syncing your settings.
Yep. Because like you said, one of the backups turned that on for you.
Yeah.
Because it's not your computer. It's Microsoft's computer.
Yeah. And it's in the changelog that no one reads.
Right. So, yeah, that's already being done. So many of you may already be on the ESU.
Or available to get it for free because you already are syncing your settings.
It's not getting any sound from YouTube.
Okay, I'll check.
All right, do you have a question?
We're checking. We just had someone call and say,
did we go a whole hour with no sound?
He's not getting any. He's not getting any sound from YouTube.
Sir, do you have a question?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he's right. No sound.
Why didn't I notice that? Okay. Why isn't it working?
And why didn't anybody else call and tell us that?
Yeah.
Somebody's your name.
So we'll see. Dave, right. Steve. What's his name? Steve. Steve is frantically trying to figure out why there's no sound on YouTube. Why there's no, I can't do that. I won't do that. Why there's, it's been so long since I did ASL, I don't remember most of it.
So I'm going to have to upload the local recording into YouTube.
Right.
All right, so there were 27 people watching on YouTube, and no one said anything about no sound?
Exactly.
There we are. Now I'm hearing it, yep. All right, now we're getting sound on YouTube. Sorry.
All right, well, in that case, we'll go back to the phones and talk to Fred from Rochester, New York.
Recording into YouTube.
Right.
Turn down your radio, please.
Fred, turn your radio down.
Hello?
Yep.
Fred?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi, go ahead.
For some reason, your volume's not working too well.
Ours or yours? Which volume? The volume here on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what the...
Dave was loud and clear when he answered, but right now I'm barely hearing you.
Okay, well, what's up?
Okay, so I've been watching you on YouTube and listening to you on the Jazz Station app, but I was calling in to tell you that very same thing.
Okay.
But you got that covered now because it just almost blasted me into the next room.
You turned it up because you thought it was too low, and now it's too loud.
Yeah, and I'll start to click in. So I have two desktop computers. One of them it came with Windows 11, and I used that for two applications only. They're both related to my work. And I've tried to mess around with Wine, but I don't think I couldn't get one of those programs to work. And if both doesn't work, then I didn't bother trying the second one. But I've been trying to figure out what I want to do next because the machine that I'm running Linux is a HP 800. It's not a very powerful machine. It doesn't have a separate sound card. It has plenty of memory and plenty of storage, but the image quality isn't as good as the other machine. And I'm thinking of kind of switching things around. And I was doing some research. Virtual machine versus dual boot. Or just staying with two separate machines. Because I can fairly easily click. I've got the same monitor on both machines. I can click back and forth on the monitors. Relatively easy.
Yeah.
Opinions on all that.
Okay, so if you are going to dual boot with a Windows machine, you have to understand that sometimes when Windows does an update, it kills the other bootable thing.
Yeah, I've seen something about that on YouTube.
Yeah.
Especially if it's on the same drive. If you have two separate drives, it's easier.
Right.
Okay.
But then every time you want to switch, you have to turn it off, go into the BIOS. Switch the boot drive. or turn it on with F12 or whatever your boot menu is and pick one. But that is doable. Wine, you said, is a non-starter for you.
I couldn't get it to run one of the apps. It just didn't recognize it. You know, a whole bunch of things that it did recognize, but it didn't recognize it, couldn't find it. I may have done something wrong. I don't know, but I kind of gave up on it for the time being.
Yeah.
But running two machines, I would like to put the Linux on the machine that has the video card.
Right.
But I still need, every once in a while, I need that other two programs. Like I said, it's the only thing I run on there.
Right. So, a virtual machine, whether you run Linux in a virtual machine on Windows or Windows on a virtual machine on Linux, a virtual machine lets you essentially run a second computer inside your main computer.
And if you're not doing anything CPU or GPU intensive, you know, like gaming, then VMs work just fine.
Right.
Okay.
Go ahead.
In your opinion, is that a better option than the dual boot?
Yes.
That's how you find a better.
Well, right. But
right.
Like I said, some Windows updates break dual booting, which becomes just a massive pain in the patoot. So I don't like the idea of dual booting for that reason. So a VM is better. Now, the other question comes down into what you do on the VM. Because if you do a lot of things that require a USB connection or that sort of thing.
Other hardware.
Then you'll find that it's trickier to set up. So let's say that the software you have to run on Windows requires some other device that's plugged into the machine. It's better to run that natively and run Linux on a VM. But if it doesn't, it doesn't matter which you do.
Okay.
However, let me go on. Mm-hmm. And since you've already got Windows 11 running on that machine, it's far easier to put Linux into a VM than it is to uninstall Windows, install Linux, install the VM, install Windows 11 in there, and then convince Microsoft that it's okay that you're running it that way.
Right.
So,
yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, just in terms of how easy it is to do everything. And then depending on how much RAM you have and what your CPU is, you can certainly give Linux enough to run it comfortably. So, for example, if you've got a machine with 8 cores, you can give 2 or 4 of them to the virtual machine. And if you've got 32 gig of RAM, say, you can give 8 gig to the virtual machine, or 16 gig of RAM, you can give 8 gig to the virtual machine.
And it only needs it when that VM is running.
Right. So if you really have to do something intensive under Windows, shut down the VM.
Yeah, that's the downside of a VM, is you're running two computers.
Right.
On the same hardware, so each one is going to be a little slower than it would be on a dual boot.
Okay.
But it's more convenient than a dual boot, because you don't have to reboot.
Right. And again, as Steve said, if you have to do something super intensive, shut down the VM, do the intensive thing, start your VM up again.
Okay, yeah. What I'm hearing and what I'm taking in is maybe my best option is to upgrade the HP machine to one that has a better video.
That's certainly also a possibility. If you've got the ability to change the video card in the HP machine, that really is a fairly, and you know, a decent video card is not terribly expensive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you know, unless you're looking to play games at, yeah, you know, 8K, 75 frames, 120 frames, yeah, a second, a decent video card is not terribly expensive.
No, I'm not. I do a bit of computer programming, program simulation, modeling, do some 3D printing, creating objects.
Yeah, so those are more intense things. Right. That would be a little better as a dual boot.
So if you are sharing a KVM switch, a keyboard video monitor between two machines,
right,
your best bet is to match the video cards, at least in terms of screen size, you know, 1920 by 1280 or whatever that is, and hertz, like 60 hertz. That way, okay, you don't have as many issues switching from one to the other.
Oh, okay.
That's what I did. I have two separate Linux machines running on a KVM, and once I set both monitors to the same resolution and refresh rate, a lot of problems that I had been having visually went away.
Okay. It's so the HP machine, my Linux machine, and it doesn't show, it doesn't look as crisp as the, and all I'm doing is clicking a switch on the bottom of the monitor. It doesn't look as clear as the, I got a Intel Nook with a video card.
One of two things is happening. Either it's just not as good a card, or you're running at the wrong resolution.
Or frequency.
Okay. Or frequency.
So, yeah, so you're running one at 50 hertz and one at 100 hertz. The 100 hertz is going to look a whole lot better.
Right.
I think the HP has got an integrated graphics.
And that, generally speaking, is a lower-end graphics card.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So if you can match the card that's in your Windows 11 machine... Wait, which one has a worse video?
The Windows 11. The Windows 11 has the better.
There you go. So if you can match the card, then and I don't mean it has to be the exact model, but it should do the same resolution and the same refresh rate. And if you can match those two cards, you'll get a much better experience. Well, you get the same experience on both machines.
Yeah.
So the HP is a mini, HP 800.
Yeah, but what? Well, yes, okay. But what you can do is you go in and look at the settings for that display, and it will tell you what the resolution is and what the refresh rate is. Then you can buy a card for the Linux machine that matches those specs
and has the same amount of memory.
Right, that's less important, but. Yeah, still not a bad idea. But the two.
How would I know that I can even put a video card, add a video card to the HP machine?
Is it a desktop or a laptop?
It's a desktop.
Then you should be able to add one without a problem.
Because if it's a mini desktop, there might be a limit on what physical size card you can put into it.
Yeah, some of them, though, you can get half cards.
And that would be in the manual for the computer.
Okay.
What kind of slots it has? PCIe. PCIe is common, but 16 lane, 24 lane.
Right.
So many computers have everything built in anymore. Not many people add cards these days.
Right.
Yeah.
But really, the two most important things to match are the resolution, for example, 1920 by 1280 or whatever it is, and the frequency, the refresh rate, which would be 60 hertz or 70 hertz or 75 hertz or 120 hertz or whatever it is.
Right. Okay. Matching the frequency.
Right.
Okay. So...
They probably call it refresh rate. Probably.
and that would be information would be in the settings.
Mm-hmm. That would be in the settings on the Windows machine. That'll tell you what that one is already running at.
And then compare that to the manual for the monitor to see what the monitor is capable of.
Right. And then on the Linux machine, you may not have to buy a new machine. You just may be running it at the wrong resolution or refresh rate. And you
That would be in the machine settings.
And that would be in the machine settings on the Linux machine.
Oh, okay. You have to do some digging.
Right, so you want to check the display settings on the Windows machine and write those down, and then see if you can match them on the Linux machine. If you can't, if you can, you're done. If you can't, then you need to buy a video card that matches the specs that you got from the Windows machine.
So I go online and buy a video card. How do I know it'll fit that machine?
Well, that's what Steve said. You got to check the manual to see what kind of cards and what size and et cetera, et cetera.
What version of the motherboard do you have?
What's the manual?
Yeah.
So you go online to HP's website and download the specification sheet.
Right. And you can, I don't know if HP does that.
I found there's like 27 HP 800s. So you got to look up your specific model number of your specific HP 800.
Right. So once you have your model number, which should be on it, you should be able to go there and download drivers or manuals or.
I mean, he might even be able to look at the. A lot of the motherboards had model numbers and that silk screened on them. And you can do a search that way that then will show you the layout of that particular board and what slots they have available for video.
Mm.
Right. In fact, you might be able to go, and this is what I did with a couple of the old machines I had. You get the model number off the back of the machine, and then you just type in that model number space manual, and it generally will bring up an HP website that has that manual to download.
You may even want to check the connection to the monitors. So say it's one monitor is VGA, one monitor is HDMI. The HDMI one would look better because it's a digital signal, not an analog signal.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, they're both identical cables.
Okay. Then I would start with getting the specs from the Windows machine and seeing if you can match those specs on the Linux machine.
Okay. That's a good start.
Yeah, I would start there and then go on to finding a card that matches those specs to put into the HP.
Mm. The other problem I created for myself is I've got a lot of stuff packed into a very small desk space.
Yeah, well, welcome to that club.
Yeah, I got the power backup. I've got the router. I've got all of that is in monitor and two computers and all that is in a 36-inch wide space.
Yeah. No, I get it, but this is so you may not have to change anything externally. If you can do everything through software, you win.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So start there, okay?
All right, I'll have to start digging. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, good luck, Fred.
All right, bye.
Yep. Generally speaking, if you only have one machine, the specs are the specs. But when you use a KVM, a keyboard, video, mouse connector system that lets you switch between two different machines, now you really want to match the specs as much as possible. It also saves wear and tear on the monitor, by the way, because it doesn't have to do a lot of switching. But also then it just means that switch happens easily to your eyes, easy on your eyes.
And a lot of monitors these days have multiple inputs. So you could use two computers with one monitor and use the video switch built in
to
the
monitor. Do keyboard and
mouse. Doesn't do keyboard and mouse, though, yeah.
Right. So I have a KVM switch between my two Linux machines. They are running the same resolution and the same refresh rate, but there is a five-second delay that's built in. I don't know why, but when I push the button on the KVM, it takes 5 seconds.
Yep.
And it says so right in the manual. There's a five-second delay.
We had a customer that had a super high-end monitor. No, go ahead. That's the end.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And thankfully, we don't have to listen to Steve's story. I know, sorry. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly, truly we are grateful to you that we continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just a few.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, we were just talking during the break about KVM switches and all of those cool things. And I'll tell you what, that's old school. That really is old school stuff, but... what a KVM switch does is allow you to connect more than one computer to your... What the heck is going on here, do we think? Okay. All right, I'm not going to do that then. Thank you. We're going to go instead. We're going to go back to the phones. And we are going to talk to Dennis. From Rochester, New York. What's up, Dennis?
Well, I've been listening to your show, and I took a look at my Windows 11 PC, and it says 23H2, and so I downloaded the Microsoft Installation Assistant, and now it says this PC does not meet Windows 11 requirements. My processor isn't... Because of my processor, which is a AMD Ryzen 7 1700 8-core processor.
All right, so
what do I do now?
Well, the thing is, you downloaded the wrong thing. So you don't need the installer; you just need to run an update. So
I tried to do updates, and it says my system is up to date.
It is possible. Because Microsoft changed the requirements for Windows 11, that you can run an early Windows 11, but you cannot run a later Windows 11.
Okay.
And it so says your CPU is the problem?
Yes.
It's hard to change.
Green check marks for this PC supports Secure Boot, supports TPM 2.0. There's at least 4 gigs of memory, because I have 16, but then it says the processor has a red thing saying the processor, the Ryzen 7.
The X2?
Oh, it's a Ryzen, it's not an Intel?
No, it's AMD Ryzen 7, and it's a 1708-core processor, and I know it has 16 threads.
Yeah, Steve could be right. The Ryzen... processor may not handle that.
So I need to go somewhere and look for a list of what's acceptable. What are acceptable processors?
Yeah, we're frantically looking that up ourselves at the moment. Ryzen 7200 you have?
1700.
1700, okay. 1700 Windows 11.
There we go. List of approved CPUs. Oh, it's huge. Windows.
Yeah, 11. Ryzen. The AMD Ryzen 7 1700 is not officially supported for Windows 11. So I'm not sure quite how you.
So you got to stick with Windows 10.
No, he's on Windows 11 now. The early Windows 11 supported it, but the later ones don't.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
Yeah, how do I get to the list of approved processors? What do I...
I Googled Microsoft or Windows 11 approved processors.
Ah, okay. That sounds easy. So that's my solution, is I just have to get the... I have to change the processor.
Yeah. What what version are you on now, did you say? 22H2?
23H2.
Right, and as I said earlier, that is now no longer supported.
Right.
Yeah, so yours is, I think, a first-generation Ryzen processor, and Microsoft only supports second generation and newer. It's nonsense, but sure. Like we said, it's their computer, not yours, so they can do what they want.
So, yeah, so 25H2 Intel Ryzen Pro 3000 series or later. AI Max series or later. 10 series or later.
So are you running a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
Then you might be able to change the processor. Depends on what motherboard you have as to what processors it will take. And only your manual can tell you that, or you can crack open the case and find a model number and serial number on the motherboard itself, and then look up the specs for that online.
Yeah, I have a thing that I downloaded previously from Hewlett-Packard, and it does list all the processors that it will accept, so I'll take a look on that. But what specific generation? It has to be Generation 3 Ryzen if I'm going to put a Ryzen in there?
Yep, second generation or newer.
Yeah, okay. Their list just says what series it is. It doesn't say what generation. I'm assuming 3000 series would be third generation?
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah. And if you have a 1700 series, that's first generation.
Ah, okay. Okay. I'll look and see what my paperwork says for what other processors this machine will accept and go from there, I guess.
So then what you want to do is once you know which ones it will take, then you need to go online and see what the prices are. And then before you commit to buying one, go to that list of approved actual real processors and see if it's on that list.
Or, you know, since it's coming up Christmas, there's going to be a lot of great deals out there right now, Biden, to get your bucks. That you might want to also do some shopping online to see what other newer system you might be able to get. You know, more, it'll come usually with more memory, bigger hard drive, faster processor, and save you all this frustration. And then you could take that box that you currently have and turn it into a Linux box.
Well, that sounds like a possibility, too. Okay.
Have double the fun.
Luckily, you've got some choices now.
Yep. So I know what to do now. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck.
I don't think we've talked about that before, that your device used to be Windows 11 compatible, and now it's not because they
right.
changed
Microsoft
something.
Keeps moving the goalposts.
Yeah.
You know, they look, I'll beat the dead horse. You don't own your computer. Microsoft does. Okay. And they want to make it as easy as possible for them, and the heck with you. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is. So, you know, if they decide that they don't want to support Series 1 Ryzen processors anymore, well, they're going to do that.
There are ways to install Windows on non-supported computers, but they're not supported for a reason, and that's probably because they'd be too slow.
And also then they'll break it with the next update.
Yeah.
And now you have to go through all of that again. So, yeah, I don't see that as a viable alternative anymore. Unless you like screwing around with your computer.
Like I say, if he wants to mess around with it, just get a new one and then use that one for Linux. Play right. around with that.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Kevin from Rochester, New York. What's up, Kevin?
Hi, guys. I have a very similar problem just to the previous caller.
Okay.
I've got a laptop at Dell. It was it was one of those mystery laptops from Woot.
I love those.
Yeah, it's got 11 Pro on it, and I can't get past 23H2. It's got an i7 in it.
Yeah, which i7? That's the question.
8665U, which I'm seeing as is supported.
You can So software update says you're up to date and doesn't show anything.
Correct.
There is a way, in fact, this may be for the previous caller, too. There's a way to tell it to skip updates or hide updates. So maybe that accidentally got turned on and you have to unhide an update.
Okay.
Or you can try downloading the full Windows 11 25H2 installer and try running that.
Okay.
But back up your system because it may delete everything.
Right, okay. I'm honestly, I've got it on a dual boot with Linux. I only kept Windows, you know, just in case I ever needed Windows, you know.
Sure.
I've just been updating it every month or two. I haven't had to use it, honestly, yet. But usually when I'm listening to you guys on Saturday is when I open it up and I update my Windows installation on it, you know.
Sure. No, I get that.
Yeah. I heard you guys talking about 24H2, and then you said 23H2 is no longer.
Right, it's no longer supported.
What generation i7 did you say you had?
I don't know what generation. It's an i7-8665U.
So that's probably 8th generation, which is the oldest i7 supported, is 8th gen.
I do see it listed on...
8665, it is listed.
Yeah, but I mean, I know in the Windows Update app, I know there's someone said, well, you have to turn on the Get Updates as soon as they're available toggle, but that's grayed out.
Huh.
The computer didn't used to be part of a business, did it?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. It was a mystery refurb laptop, you know, that came with Windows on it. So I'm wondering if it was like maybe it was from a school or a business.
Anything possible?
Administrator management stopping updates.
Right.
Does it in that Windows update? Does it say anything about being managed by an administrator?
No, it just says this setting isn't available due to your organization's policy.
Yes.
But there you go.
Yeah, that's it.
So the business that controls that computer has turned off updates.
Right, okay.
So how do we remove that?
Circumvent that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I went down a rabbit hole, and people are like, oh, go into the registry and look at this and that, you know what I mean? I was like, you know what?
Yeah, you don't want to...
Windows entirely and just put Linux on the whole hard drive.
You have to go into the policy editor rather than the registry editor.
Okay, all right, yeah.
But you got to find the right policy. I'm Googling around for that. So that's the thing. You want business policies.
Okay.
That's the thing to search for.
Mm-hmm.
Or corporate policy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see target release version is one of the options I can change, I guess. Enables IT administrators to specify which version they would like their devices to move to.
You could try. GRC has a program called In Control that's designed to stop Windows 11 from upgrading. But part of it is setting those group policies.
Okay.
And so maybe you can stop the policy preventing Windows 11 from upgrading.
Yeah, it's a group policy. Now, the real question is going to be, so you go into settings. If it's a work account.
It's a local account, so I don't. It's not even like a Microsoft online account, you know. Because it was Windows 11 Pro. So
and that's the only account on there?
That's the only account. I reinstalled it from scratch when I got it, and that was the only account I installed on it.
Hmm. Interesting. Anyway, go into settings and accounts and see what's in there. If there is an account that isn't yours, see if you can get into it and there might be under settings accounts there should be a choice of access work or school. And if there are any, disconnect them.
Okay. I don't see any listed. It just says connect. I don't see any like listed to disconnect.
All right. So then it's oh dear. Then if you installed it from scratch, there shouldn't even be a.
Did you erase the drive, or did you just install Windows on top of what was already there?
I'm pretty sure I erased it because I ended up installing a dual boot with Linux and Windows that it came with.
That should have deleted it. Although Apple goes by the serial number of the computer and the first thing it deck checks on the internet. We've ended up getting some brand new machines from distribution that have been tied to someone else's management console.
Oh, wow.
So someone was going to buy that computer and didn't, but it already got managed.
So you can go into the group policy editor.
Yep.
Which, if you open up a terminal or just type the Windows key and R, you can run gpedit.msc.
Okay.
And that will open up the local policy editor, the local group policy editor.
Yeah, I just opened it.
Okay. Then in there, if you go to computer configuration, I hope you're writing this down. Administrative.
I'll go back and listen to you guys.
Okay. Computer configuration, administrative templates.
Yep.
Windows components.
Mm-hmm.
Windows update. Then manage updates offered from Windows update. You should find a policy that says something like select the target feature update version or defer Windows feature updates.
Okay.
Then if there are any configured policies, double-click on them and change them to not configure.
Okay, yeah, all the ones that show up under that
right.
Not configured.
Once you've done that, save all that, get out of that, then open a command prompt as administrator.
Right.
And type GP update, all one word, space, /force.
Okay.
Then reboot your computer and check Windows update again.
Okay. Now, even if they all say not configured already, all those policies already.
Well, it may be that nobody updated the group policy command, right? The GP update space / force.
Sure.
And then reboot and see if that managed by your organization message is gone.
Okay. I'll try that. And
alternately, if that doesn't work, last chance, use the media creation tool to perform an in-place upgrade.
Okay. Ooh, big lightning.
I just posted a link on how to stop Windows update in the group policy. So if you reverse those instructions, you can start Windows update in group policy. Which is basically what GRC's In Control does, which is a free utility I posted a link for also. So you can try that, too. Then you may not have to mess with the group policy editor.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll try all that stuff, and I'll let you guys know next week if it worked.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah, it's not a big deal for me. If it doesn't work, I'll just nuke it and go all Linux.
There you go. There you go. All
right. Nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
It's the only way to be sure. All right, thanks.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thanks, Kevin. There's. This is why I don't run. Okay, never mind. Yeah. Never mind.
No. You're.
This is.
Justification.
I've avoided that.
Well, there's management console tools for Linux, too, right?
There are management consoles for Linux, but they're a lot easier to manage, and nobody outside me has any control over my systems.
Yep.
Well, that's the big thing.
There was a presentation at one of the hacker DEF CONs a couple years ago where someone was able to demonstrate if you have a malicious MDM, you can install malware on a computer from the factory.
Yes, you can.
Yes, because there's a malicious person in the middle.
Yeah.
You know?
right.
Malicious, well, no, it's not man in the middle anymore. It's adversary in the middle.
Right.
So, if someone malicious organizes your computer by the serial number or the MAC address, even before you get it, it can be infected.
Right.
Because someone had their hands in it first.
Right. And that, rarely happens at the factory with a brand new machine, but certainly can happen, with a Woot thing. And that's one of the things that I don't worry about because I've said this before, I'm addicted to buying old computers on Woot. But the first thing I do is wipe out the drive and install Linux. There is no Windows on it, so I don't care who owned it before me. That's all done. So that's not a problem for me.
Speaking of which, I just, you know, I had a Raspberry Pi 4.
Yeah.
In reserve. Keyword was had.
Had.
Set it up. Because the software I was using that I had been beta testing, helped beta test, I had the file being served, you know, out on a Google Drive. And it worked, you know, but it was slow.
Sure.
So I said, the heck with that. Formatted my Raspberry Pi 4, put a 2 terabyte hard drive on it, sure, that I had sitting around, moved the file down to there, and shared it between the three computers.
Yeah.
What a difference. Going through 52,000 records.
Yeah. Zero time.
It sorts like a breeze. So here's the conundrum.
Yeah.
If it's this good on a Raspberry Pi 4.
Yep.
Well, yes, it depends on how fast your machine is, how much RAM it has, how fast the hard drive is.
What it might do on a Raspberry Pi 5.
You'll be finding out, I'm sure.
Yep.
Or even a 6.
That's right.
Yeah. But, yeah, no.
Somebody was talking about the Raspberry Pi 6 the other day.
It's got to be in development already.
Oh, yeah.
The 5 is out. The 6 is in development. Probably the 7's in development.
7's too. Probably in the dream sheet.
Yeah, late 2025, which is a now, or 2026.
Probably going to be 2026 from what I'm hearing from the group that I... there's a group on Ham Radio that does all talking about Raspberry Pis and all that type of stuff. And the gentleman from England who is into beta testing and all that type of stuff has already said 7's on the board. And
sure.
6, probably 6 realistically with everything else going on with the tariffs and all this other bull, it's probably going to be next year.
Yeah. Well, right. I've said before, as much as I love my Raspberry Pis, I've become enamored of the NUC computers, the next unit of computing, the little mini PCs.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can buy those off of eBay. Like I said, I spent for $120 on one. i5 processor, 8 gig of RAM, and a 1 terabyte drive for $120. I can't get that in a Raspberry Pi.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Comes network ready?
It had everything. I was convinced. I was utterly convinced it would not have...
Do me a favor and send me the link. Please.
Yes. I was utterly convinced it would not have the NVMe in it, the terabyte drive. And I was still okay with that for $120.
Because, yeah, I'm thinking, you know, I'd like to get something a little bit faster than the 4.
Yep.
Because I am doing... between three different, you know, computers, that would be perfect.
It had gigabit Ethernet on it. You know, I'm using it as my Plex server.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I keep all my movies and my TV shows and stuff on it. And it runs like a charm. And up, you know, it's Linux. It's just the Plex server is a snap. So it just installed easy, like a snap.
In a snap.
And so, and not a Thanos snap. And so, you know, I update it like I update all my other machines, which means I rarely have to reboot it or anything else. And it runs great. And like I said, it was $120. And I thought, even if it doesn't have any storage,
mm-hmm,
I've got a 256 gig NVMe.
Send me the link. Because
this was like a year ago. I don't know if they have any left.
Hey,
but they come up all the time.
But they got to have others out there that.
And it was at, you know,
Christmas time.
I got it on eBay, and it was a reputable seller with, you know, lots and lots of you know, hundreds and hundreds of 5-star reviews. So at least some of them had to be real.
There you go.
So anyway, that was
all right. Thank you.
All right. That's it. We are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank everybody who was listening. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm not going to, but I want to. I'm Nick Francesco. Again, thanks to all of you called in. Really interesting questions this week. We very much like it. We will see you in just 166 hours. You've been listening to Soundbites and member-supported Jazz 90.1. Be good to one another, will you?